From Winburg to Greensburg, Hollidaysburg to Jeffersonville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the Pennsylvania 30-Day Fund has helped over 300 small businesses with forgivable loans to help them reopen in the aftermath of the COVID-19 shutdown. Jeff Bartos of the fund is here with details. Guitars Over Guns provides youth from disadvantaged backgrounds a way to see their potential through the language of music. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has Chad Bernstein in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Pennsylvania has taken the first steps toward criminal justice reform by passing changes to professional licensure laws. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity has this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jeff Bartos in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. A recent poll conducted by SPNR Research found approval of Governor Tom Wolf's handling of the COVID-19 crisis has plummeted. Back in April, the governor was receiving high marks for his handling of the pandemic. The new numbers show a 43% drop in voter approval. Wolf has come under harsh criticism for his administration's slow reopening of businesses, a significant backlog in processing unemployment claims, and the tragic number of nursing home residents who have died, at least in part, due to his administration's policies. The Center Square reports that an analysis of Internal Revenue Service data by the independent website WirePoint finds Pennsylvanians cumulatively saw a decrease in gross income of $10.4 billion between 2010 and 2018. Penns Woods ranked 36th among the 50 states in revenue lost due to outmigration, which is more people leaving the state than moving in. Generally speaking, states with a flat income tax like Pennsylvania gained net income, while those with progressive income taxes lost. Pennsylvania bucked that trend to be a net income loser. The Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh has labeled as disingenuous and misleading the American Lung Association's representation of the air quality in the Pittsburgh region. The association's State of the Air report claims particulate pollution in the Pittsburgh region has worsened, but an analysis by the Allegheny Institute claims scientific malpractice and points to flaws in the monitoring system as part of the problem. Some counties with no monitors were also labeled as having poor air quality, which the Institute says is an overreach at its worst. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Small businesses have struggled to stay alive and reopen following the mandatory COVID-19 shutdown. The Pennsylvania 30-Day Fund has helped over 300 of them with forgivable loans. Here to talk about the fund and how it works is Jeff Bartos. Jeff is a co-founder and board chairman of the fund. Jeff, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jeff, the Pennsylvania 30-Day Fund. Explain to our listeners what the fund is.
Back in April, in the midst of all of the tumult that people were experiencing, whether they were small businesses or large businesses, been in business for 6 weeks or 60 years, I think everybody was shocked by the speed in which everything stopped and businesses' cash flow stopped like overnight. I started a nonprofit with the help of lots of people, probably 70 volunteers at this point, between board members, volunteers from the University of Pennsylvania, lawyers, accountants. Everybody came together in rapid fashion. We formed a nonprofit. We were able to obtain a 501c3 designation from the IRS, and we immediately started raising funds from Pennsylvanians from across the Commonwealth, all income brackets, all races, all ages. This was a true coming together of private citizens looking to help small businesses in their communities that they rely on for the everyday quality of life. And so we started this nonprofit. We began raising money in the end of April, beginning of May. And our board met for the first time on May 8th to review the first batch of applications that came in. Since that time, so in less than 60 days, we've received over 1,500 applications from small businesses across the Commonwealth. And we've been able, very fortunate to be able to raise the funds so far. We've been able to fund, as of this, as of today, over 330 small businesses representing 33 counties and counting. So we've been able to help businesses in 33 counties around the Commonwealth. And of course, we're raising money every day. We're meeting every day to review applications. We're making funding decisions every day. And our goal, as we sit here today, is to raise $3 million and help 1,000 small businesses across the Commonwealth.
What sort of help do you offer these small businesses? Is this a loan program, a grant program? What type of assistance is available to them?
On our website, which is pa30dayfund.com, we ask small businesses who are looking for help, need help right now, to apply. It is free of red tape. It is a very simple process. We ask people to tell us about their business. We ask the owners to upload a video of no more than 3 minutes telling us about their business, their employees, why they love what they do. We review those applications daily with our volunteers, and then we meet right away as a board, like I said, every day. So oftentimes within 3 business days, the business owner will find out whether they've been approved for funding. And what we provide, Lohman, are $3,000 forgivable loans. What does that mean? It means that if you've been approved as a business, we call you with the good news. We send you an email. You provide us with a W-9, and we send you a check. Our only expectation is that you use that to help your employees and your business. If the business is in a position down the road where they're back on their feet and things are okay, we ask them to consider paying it forward by either paying the $3,000 back to the 30-day fund so that we can provide it to another small business in need, or to pay it forward by helping another small business in their community. And just please tell us about it, because we want to highlight the great businesses that we've been so fortunate to fund.
What type of businesses? You say small business, so is there a limit to number of employees, a limit to overall gross income? Do you have a specific guideline, or does this depend on what it is the business might be doing?
So we look at businesses that have between 3 and 30 employees, have been in business for at least a year. We love startups, but we're not in the business of funding startups. We're not an angel fund. So been in business for at least a year, more than 3, less than 30 employees, be owned by a Pennsylvanian, be based in Pennsylvania, and be a for-profit business. That is no disrespect to our brothers and sisters who work in the nonprofit space, but we focused in on helping for-profit businesses.
Tell me a little bit more about the folks you have involved in this, Jeff. You mentioned universities. You mentioned people from different professions. How did you go about recruiting them and getting such a diverse group of individuals together in a very short period of time?
When my dear friend who I grew up with in the Reading, Lancaster area, Pete Snyder, started the Virginia 30-Day Fund, and when he called me a couple weeks later to tell me that I needed to do this, and I initially told him absolutely not, but he's a dear friend. We've been friends for 40 plus years, and he said just like this to me. He said, 10 years from now, because I had been complaining about what was happening in my own business with the shutdown, and he said to me, 10 years from now, when you look back, do you want to remember that you complained about your own business woes, or do you want to remember that you took that statewide network that you worked so hard to build, you called people, you raised funds, and you helped a lot of people who were in need at this very difficult time. And it was sort of an unfair statement, right? Because it got me right in the heart, and he knew that that would wear down any defenses I had. And I said, okay, you know, what do I need to do? And the first thing he said was, after he knew he had me, he said, you need to call a university because you're going to be overwhelmed with applications, and having students who are really looking at this time of how can they help? Like, if you're not a medical student and you're not a, like, you don't go to a school that is fashion arts or other things that would be sewing or manufacturing, like a technical university. If you're at the University of Pennsylvania, or if you're at Temple in here in Philadelphia, or at Carnegie Mellon, how could you, as a business student or a law student, help? And he said, contact the university. So I reached out to a neighbor who's a professor at Penn. He recruited the first 3 students who were interested. They're JD MBAs at Penn. And they've now recruited over 40 of their classmates, ranging from first years up through third years, who have been working with us now for over 60 days. And they are the most remarkable group of young people I've ever had the privilege to work with. They are dedicated, hardworking. Some of them, Lohman, putting in more than 12 hours a day on this project, all volunteer. And they're great, great young people who just want to help businesses that they're never going to meet right? They're not likely to end up in Clearfield County or Crawford County or Venango County, and we've helped businesses in all of those counties. And so it's really been a beautiful showing of love and support for the businesses, small businesses in Pennsylvania. I then went about recruiting a board, and that came together pretty quickly. And we now have a board of 9, again, dedicated business people, women and men, who give anywhere from 2 to 4 hours every day of their time to work on this project.
There are, of course, a number of federal programs, some under the CARES Act, others that have come in additional stimulus packages, and, of course, state programs as well, Jeff. So if a small business is partaking of any of those other programs, are they still eligible for participation in the Pennsylvania 30-day fund?
Yeah, again, a great question. Initially, we really were trying to help the businesses that did not have access for any number of reasons to the PPP or an EIDL or a state program. But as this has gone along, we see a lot of businesses that had PPP funds. Those funds were used up after 8 weeks. And so we are definitely helping businesses today that we weren't able to help at the beginning, because these are businesses that are ready to open or are just opening. And our $3,000 forgivable loan can mean the difference between reopening or not reopening. And so if we can really make a difference for a business like that, we're proud to be able to invest, and we make that available. So yes, we don't put restrictions on businesses that have already received other help.
You mentioned earlier that you've raised over $2 million so far. So if we have somebody listening who is sitting there and saying, hey, look, my business is doing well, or I have available cash and I would really like to do something to help small businesses get through the upcoming months, which are still going to be very difficult for small businesses and everybody, tell us how folks can go about participating or contributing to the fund.
People can donate online at PA30dayfund.com. So it's PA30dayfund.com. We also have check and wire. People have written us checks and sent us wires. And anyone who would have a question can just email me at Jeff@PA30dayfund.com. Loman, we've received donations as small as $3 online and as large as $50,000 online. We've received checks for $100,000, and we've received checks for $25. And we have one matching grant right now of $1 million. Ira Lupert and Pam Eastat from Philadelphia have made a $1 million matching challenge grant available. That means every dollar that someone donates right now is matched dollar for dollar by Mr. Lupert and Ms. Eastat. So really, your dollar is two right now. And so we're very grateful for any support that people give. And we're all asking how we can help at this very difficult time. And 100%, I want to stress again, 100% of every donation goes directly to small businesses. Any and all ancillary expenses are being covered by myself and a couple other board members. And so 100% of any donation goes directly to small businesses.
We are talking with Jeff Bartos, who is co-founder and board chairman of the Pennsylvania 30-Day Fund. And Jeff, once again, give us the website where folks can go if they have a small business that needs help, or if they have money they can contribute to help small businesses.
So thank you, Loman. It's PA30dayfund.com. So PA, the number 30dayfund.com. So PA30dayfund.com. And my email, if anyone has questions or needs any further information, is Jeff, very simple, Jeff@PA30dayfund.com.
Jeff Bartos from the Pennsylvania 30-Day Fund. Jeff, thank you for being here.
Loman, thank you so much for making this available and for sharing our story with your listeners.
Helping youth reach their full potential through the inspiration of music is the mission of Guitars Over Guns. Joe Geiger from the First Nonprofit Foundation has founder Chad Bernstein in this month's Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Chad, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for having me.
Chad, we'd like you to share with our listeners, what was the inspiration for you to become a founder of a nonprofit organization under the title of Guitars Over Guns?
I've been a musician pretty much for as long as I can remember, and the reason and what I've been called to do in my entire life is really centered around the connection and the universal language that music provides. And I've watched that play out in many different forms and instances in my life, from the time that I was kind of as young as I can remember and connecting with other kids through music, to the opportunity to literally travel the world and watch music form bonds and allow people to communicate that, you know, may not have spoken the same language, but shared an inexplicable bond on the stage. And when I moved to Miami from Chicago, started playing in a band by the name of Swanalo that had a very multicultural, you know, Miami is such a melting pot. And in this band, we represented so many different countries and so many areas of influence globally with the music that it was really an incredible opportunity to live out what was really a childhood dream. And one of the friends of the band had been working in a juvenile detention center and asked us to come and work with her kids for an afternoon. And we didn't think much of it other than, you know, automatically just kind of saying yes, if we can be helpful with the music, we'd love to. We've been doing some ad hoc things in the community really since the band was formed. And we got to the juvenile detention center a few days later and, you know, checked in, and they put us through the metal detector and all those things. And we were told actually that the guitars couldn't be in because the strings could be used to strangle us. Mm-hmm. And it was a really sobering moment. And ultimately we were allowed to bring the instruments in, but it certainly set a tone of seriousness that we took heed to. And as the youth kind of came into the room, you know, it was clear that the energy or the vibe of the room was not overtly welcoming. It was definitely one of, we need to kind of prove our values being here. And if I'm being totally honest, we did not do that when we started talking to them. And there was nothing really that we could say, despite having some pretty exciting musical careers, both the band and as individuals. I think at the time I was playing with Pitbull or some other big artists outside of the band as well. And the kids just really didn't find it to be that interesting. And so we got a little bit nervous and as a last-ditch effort decided to play a song. And when we started to play, the entire mood in the room shifted. And we saw heads bobbing and kids kind of dancing in their seats. And when our MC started rapping, you know, and the beat dropped, it was clear that these kids were in line with us and in tune with us. And we ended the song and there was kind of a brief pause, and from the back of the room, a kid that was really trying to be disruptive just shouted out something. And as the security guards, the officers, you know, tried to kind of, you know, center the room and tell him to pretty much sit down and shut up, we asked him to sing it again, and he did, and we chanted it back, and it went back and forth. And the drummer started playing a beat behind that, and the band kind of started to come in and form a song. And all of a sudden, the energy in the room was just infectiously growing from every individual that was participating. Our MC started freestyling and started rapping and kind of bringing kids into that in his words. A couple of the kids started rapping, and the whole room turned into this kind of unexpected fertile ground for creation. And the music was coming from everyone in all directions, and it was a really beautiful thing. And as soon as we got done with that, the energy of the room allowed for the kind of field to be leveled and for all of us to have room to start conversation.
Coming out of this, you founded an organization under the classification of 501c3, a nonprofit organization. A bit of a shift from the career path you were on.
Yeah, a complete shift. And honestly came in it with kind of leaving that experience, walked away saying, look, we have a unique responsibility as artists and as musicians not to turn our backs on the ability to reach kids that society has kind of written off and the reality of what their worlds are and the way the system is designed. Like statistically, kids that are kind of being introduced into the system at that point of their lives, it's very difficult to get out of it. The thought was, well, if we can start working with these kids at a point in their lives prior to, you know, making some of the decisions that would land them in this place, then maybe we can really start to change the trajectory and the narrative.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Chad Bernstein, founder and CEO of an organization titled Guitars Over Guns. Chad, talk about a kid that got involved in the program and what the outcome was. Where are they today?
Junior, who's on our board of directors, had a handful of challenges as a young man, and certainly had a number of obstacles in his life that very easily could have defined him, or he could have allowed to define him. And his resilience and resolve and drive, once he found music, is really, he's pointed to that as being kind of the rock in his life. And the mentorship and the guidance that he's received from his mentors, he credits with being a foundational piece of what allowed him to move forward. And I think one of the things that's so important about the work is that music creates this incredible bond. It's a relationship that's cast in the vulnerability and the authenticity that music brings out of people that links our mentors to our students. And, you know, in Junior's opinion, really allowed him to see potential in himself and be held accountable to what we kind of allowed him to have the opportunity to define as success and what success should look like for him. In his words, that's something we all need in the world, and certainly in the communities that we're serving, and the lack of music programming and kind of disproportionate opportunities that are not available. It's incredibly important.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Chad Bernstein. He is the co-founder and CEO of an organization called Guitars Over Guns. They operate out of Chicago and Miami and in between. Chad, if somebody wants more information about your organization, where can they find you?
The website is guitarsoverguns.org, and all of our social media is at guitarsoverguns.
Chad, thank you for being a guest in the Lincoln Radio Program. We wish you well. Back to you, Loman.
Changes to professional licensure laws have passed the General Assembly and are the first steps on the road to criminal justice reform. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, has details on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
It was our 42nd president, President Clinton, who said, "Work is about more than making a living, as vital as that is. It's fundamental to human dignity, to our sense of self-worth as useful, independent, free people." Throughout COVID-19, we've heard the national unemployment figures and have felt the pain in the Commonwealth due to the statewide shutdown in mid-March. Since that time, between both pandemic unemployment assistance and regular unemployment compensation, PA has paid out over $18 billion in response to 2.6 million jobless claims. As we consider what it will take to get our economy moving again, we must consider freeing up Pennsylvanians to both work in the occupation of their choice and to spend their hard-earned paychecks as they see fit. We've recently made progress on one of these goals. Last Monday, Senate Bill 637 was sent to the governor for his signature. Occupational licensing reform will require that boards only withhold a license for convictions which are directly related to the practice of the occupation, and that the boards must consider the nature of the offense, the amount of time that has passed since the conviction, evidence of the applicant's fitness to practice the occupation, and other relevant factors prior to withholding a license. Last month, the Institute for Justice released a nationwide study of occupational licensing barriers for ex-offenders entitled Barred from Working. Well, PA received an F grade. The report noted that any felony conviction, regardless of its relevance, can disqualify applicants, and ex-offenders can also be disqualified if they have been convicted of a misdemeanor if it relates to the license sought. Will now work positioned to treat these individuals seeking their second chance to have a greater opportunity in a licensed profession due to the additional factors the board will be required to take into account following the passage of Senate Bill 637. What we must be committed to as a society, the legislature and employers alike, is making work something everyone can get back to doing with as few obstacles standing in the way as possible. You know, there's additional reforms we can do and pass when it comes to occupational licensing, including enacting structural comprehensive licensing reform by creating sunrise and sunset review provisions for all licensing and requiring the AG or legislature to provide active supervision over licensing boards to ensure that the least restrictive labor measures are used to address valid health and safety concerns. When it comes to workers' choice, we have the opportunity to pass the Employee Rights Notification Act in Pennsylvania this session. House Bill 785 received a vote out of the Labor and Industry Committee last March and has seen no action by the full House. The companion, Senate Bill 371, has not received consideration. This legislation would require notification to employees that they aren't required to pay union dues and that membership is indeed voluntary and not a condition of their employment. In short, it would simply require that Pennsylvania notify government workers of their Janus rights. Each of these bills would also remove invalid laws requiring agency fee payers to pay union dues. Why is the timing right for Harrisburg to act in defense of these workers now? Well, on June 25th, the Third Circuit threw out a challenge to a Pennsylvania law allowing unions to collect agency fees from non-members, agreeing with the lower court that the case brought by a group of teachers was moot in light of the U.S. Supreme Court's Janus decision, finding the practice unconstitutional. So, while the affirmation that unions can't resume charging fees as a condition of employment is positive, the legislature should now act to eliminate the statutory language around the fair share fees law to formally bring Pennsylvania in line with the law of the land and eliminate any remaining confusion. Now more than ever, employees should have greater control over their hard-earned paychecks. Getting back to work should be a priority as a commonwealth. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WXMT-FM in Smethport, WBJH-AM in Somerset, along with WOWY-FM in State College, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.